Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I'm honored to share the microphone with the most interesting business leaders. Now, these are people who have wonderful stories to share, and they are excited to freely share their journeys in business and in life, and their wisdom and their tips and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now. It's also been featured in Entrepreneur and MSNBC. So our topic today is how to defy marketplace gravity. Meredith Elliott Powell is here to discuss some of the biggest challenges she sees business owners and professionals struggle with today. Good morning, Meredith. Excuse my coughing. And welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Oh, I am excited to be back. Listen, somehow I missed the announcement that you had been written up in Inc. magazine as one of the top podcasts. Not a surprise, but congratulations.
Thank you. It surprised me. I have to say, I was like, wow. And I was number two on the list. So I walked around and I petted myself on the head till I gave myself a headache, and then I got over it. But thank you. I appreciate that. And listen, Meredith, I have to tell our audience that when I introduced the show and referenced the phrase, know, like, and trust economy, that comes straight from a book that you wrote a few years ago, called Winning in the Trust and Value Economy, A Guide to Sales Success and Business Growth. And I spent an entire year recommending that book to anyone who would listen to me. In fact, that's how we met, because your book publisher sent me a copy, and it's one of my all-time favorite business books.
Yeah, you have been one of my greatest supporters on that.
I've referenced you, maybe not by name, but every time I introduce this show, I reference you and that book. So I just want people to know I didn't pluck that out of thin air. That's where it came from.
Fun.
Well, listen, it's been a while since you've been on the show, and I'm so glad you're back. You've got a new book out, and I'm always excited to talk about your new books. But tell me what's going on with you. I mean, tell our audience a bit more about who you are and why they should be listening to you.
Oh, well, I am a business growth expert. My passion is helping people understand how to succeed and really win in today's constantly shifting economy. I mean, really, when 2008 happened, it was a downturn for a lot of people, but it was really, for me, it really sparked the work that I'm passionate about doing, and that's really helping people understand how the economy's changed and is continuing to change, how that impacts clients, how it impacts their industry. But most importantly, I want to help people understand how to make growing an organization, their business, whether it's small, whether we're talking a corporation, fun, easy, and incredibly effective. That's who I am, and that's what I'm passionate about doing.
And you do make it so easy, because you have a very, you know, you're crystal clear on what is going on and how to help other people. I'm finding that people tend to panic a bit, and then they slow down and go, okay, this is not fatal. I haven't died yet. Let's fix this, right?
Yes. In fact, I think the biggest challenge that people are facing right now, it's not that they're not working. It's not that they're not working hard. In fact, they're working harder than they've ever worked. But what I find is that they're using out-of-date strategies and out-of-date techniques, skills and strategies designed for a very different economy, a very different marketplace, and a very different type of customer.
Can you give some examples?
Sure. A lot of times I'll work with salespeople. And if I'm working with salespeople, they're still using techniques like upsell, cross-sell, the assumed close. And those all worked wonderfully when you, as a salesperson, were in charge, meaning that basically as a customer, I had to buy the product or service from you. But that's not the world that we live in today. I don't care what you do for a living, what you do, the products and services you offer are a commodity. A lot of times when I'm working with leaders, business owners, they, you know, we tend to be in a very tell direct leadership style. And that worked, a lot of those leadership techniques worked back when you controlled the employee, back when, you know, it was easy to find somebody good to work for you, or back when people needed to have a job. It's not the world we live in today. And so those strategies, those techniques, most things that most of us were taught to do, and I could go on all day, they're just designed for a very different, very different type of business marketplace.
So are people business managers, business owners, salespeople, sales teams, are they starting to become uncomfortably aware that they've got to do something different? I would assume that's the case.
Yeah, you know, the thing that the biggest call that I get right now, I mean, you ask me what I do, I coach, I consult, I'm a business strategist, but I'm also a keynote speaker and an author. And pretty much, I mean, I would say 90% of the time that I get a call to do a speaking engagement, they'll say, we need to hear the same old topics like sales and leadership, but do you have something new? Do you have a different type of approach? Because what people are realizing is exactly what I just said. I'm killing myself, and this doesn't seem to be getting any easier. Or I'll get a call from leaders saying, it's just so hard to keep my people motivated in this type of environment. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to really attract and retain really great employees. And so I do think that the pain point is really getting there. People don't know what to do, but they realize that something needs to be done differently.
So when you go in and you talk with these people, I know you well, so I know how you kind of operate, but I would love to hear some of, you know, the aha moments that you get back when you point out that things aren't the same and it is a different economy and people react to sales stimulus much different than they did. I mean, you know me. I'm hard to sell to. I'm tough.
Right.
I ask a lot of questions. I want to know what's in it for me, and I want to know if it worked for other people. And I mean, you have to really work on getting me to buy into anything. And I don't think I'm a lone ranger out there. I think a lot of people are getting that way now. We've been burnt, or we've been, you know, promised, you know, the Ferrari in front of the mansion so many times that we're like, no.
Do you know really what you just hit on? And then I'll answer your question in a second. But I think it's so important. You are the typical customer. Anybody listening to this who's trying to sell something, growing
your business,
you are, because what you said in essence is you don't trust. You don't believe. And that is, I think that's one of the biggest things that we as business professionals miss right now, is understanding that you're starting the selling cycle, the relationship cycle with somebody who is right off the bat a little bit less trustful than we used to be. If I can take you all the way back to when Lehman Brothers fell. When Lehman Brothers fell, it began the domino effect of how we as a society began to change, because all these things that we believed in started to fail one right after the other. And as they started to fail right after the other, we just looked out and we couldn't really put our faith and our trust in anything anymore. And it's not even that consumers are aware of that. It's just that subliminally, they're out there saying, I'm going to start this relationship distrust. So one of the biggest aha moments is just to, you know, work with a group of business owners or work with a group of sales professionals or customer service reps and say, look at your own buying behaviors. Look at how you're looking for something to believe in, somebody that you know, like, and trust. You understand you can sit at home in your underwear and Google and buy the product anywhere. So what you're looking for is somebody that you can believe in, somebody that you can have a relationship with, and somebody you believe, you know, is telling you the truth. And we just enter the world now in a buying way very differently.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, people buy online. I've said this time and time again, the minute Amazon can deliver 30 pounds of fresh crawfish from the Gulf, which is 15 miles from my house, and fresh lettuce, I'm done. I'm selling my car. Seriously,
right.
I'm an introvert. I don't go places. So we do purchase very differently, whether it's we're consuming knowledge or, you know, we're buying strategy sessions or we're buying a head of lettuce. I mean, Amazon is now bought, Whole Foods? So everything is changing, and it's changing very, very quickly. And our buying and our trust patterns change with that, don't they?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You know, people, it is, you know, ironically, what people miss about this economy is we are actually, as a society, less price sensitive than we've ever been. And the reason is because, again, because we don't trust. So we don't automatically believe the cheapest is best. But you have to give us a reason to pay you more. And that's really where it gets into the skills as a business owner or a sales professional in understanding how to represent, display, and get the message about your products or services across.
Do you have some examples?
Sure. Like the, you know, I mean, you can think of every single one of you. I tell this story from the stage quite a bit. But there's, years ago, I used to be a banker, and I had a, and I walked into one of my clients' offices one day that I coached, a CEO that I coach, and he jokingly said, you know, I've got two loan deals. He was getting ready to buy a building. He had two loan deals on his desk, and he said, you know, should I go with A or B? And the reason he was joking was because the loan deal that was B was far less, it had lower interest rate, it had a longer amortization, and they'd waive the closing costs. So you look at those two on a sheet of paper, you say, I'll go with loan deal A. But when I looked at both of them and I turned around to my client and I said, you know, if I were you, I'd really go with loan deal A. And he was kind of shocked, thinking, why do I have you as a business coach? You're an idiot. And, but I said, let's look below the paper. And when you look below the paper, the second loan deal B, the one that was less expensive technically, that bank had been five banks in the last 6 or 7 years. The loan officer was really young. And, you know, I didn't know how long he was going to stay in his position. And if my client got in any kind of trouble or had any kind of challenge or that, you know, or when that 5-year call came up on that loan deal, if that bank changed hands, he didn't have any relationship anywhere within that bank. The deal that was slightly more expensive was the bank had been around for over 100 years. He not only knew the loan officer, he knew all the senior management. And then I said, why would you buy an $800,000 piece of property and not do an appraisal on it? So, I mean, that's a lot of rigmarole to understand. You have to tell people why you're asking them to pay you more. And here's the thing. In this economy, people don't have a problem paying you more money. But as a salesperson or a business owner, you better understand, you better be able to sell what they're getting.
So basically, and I agree with you. Look, you know, when I do spend my money, I never go for the cheapie. You know, I do my homework. You know I do. But I, like you just said so brilliantly, I want to know truly what's in it for me. What am I going to get? How can you show me that whatever coaching or, you know, program you're selling me or offering me, I really need to understand that you're going to follow through and I'm going to get exactly what you're promising. And I'll pay. I will pay what I have to pay. But I also have to be absolutely assured that I'm getting what I'm paying for. So you just hit it right on the head of, you know, head of the nail there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, again, we're kind of back to whether it's you're leading employees or you're strategically trying to grow your business or you're selling a product or service, fundamentally beginning with understanding what's going on in the marketplace, what's going on with your competition, and what's going on with your customer base, what they want, what they value, what they're willing to pay for. In this economy, you've got to really begin with understanding those things first, because, you know, I'm a master certified strategic planner, and that means I have to get continuing education every year for it. And when I first started doing it, they would teach us that you updated a strategic plan every 4 to 5 years. Now they say we've got to do it every 4 to 5 months.
Really?
Yeah, that's how fast the economy is moving. So
wow,
just because
I had no idea.
That's another thing that I always tell professionals. It's just because it worked in January doesn't mean the same strategy is going to work in June. Think about your business and the number of things that could impact it. And what you see is that most of them are outside of your control, whether it be, interest rates, whether it be the stock market, whether it be what happens with politics, gas prices, go to war or something like that. I mean, so much. You could be minding your own business, being incredibly successful, and Amazon decides to get into your into your space. I was just thinking about that with real estate, because, you know, there's real estate minding its own business. For everybody, you need to run your business understanding that your Uber is just around the corner.
And things pivot all the time so quickly.
Yes.
I mean, just a few years ago, here comes Amazon, and, of course, it was books. It was just books, basically. And now, look, I am a voracious reader. I have thousands of books in my house, in my garage. You know, they're just everywhere. I have over $6,000 on my Kindle app. You know, I no longer, I rarely crack open a book, and I love the smell of a book, particularly old books. But with the Amazon Kindle app or an Amazon Kindle, I can highlight pages. I can, copy something, send it to my email so I can remember what was said in that book. I can look something up. I was reading a book yesterday on British history. I was able to click on it and go look at this particular, Class A1 building. And it's fascinating. Books don't do that anymore. But in a very short period of time, that came to be. And then Amazon just kept going and going and going and going. Other markets are doing this. Other people are doing this. Other individuals are doing this. So, stay on top of it. Find out what people really want.
And, and if you look at Amazon, it's, it's a great example of one of the strategies that that I always tell, that I think is very different about growth in this economy. Just like you said, when Amazon started, they started with books. And if most of us will admit it, we thought, what a ridiculous idea to sell books online. Who is ever going to buy a book online? And they fundamentally understood that. Yeah, well, exactly. So they marketed to you. They made the experience for you so great that you went out and told other people. See, it wasn't Amazon that sold me. It was the likes of you that sold me. And I think that's so important to understand about your business today, is that we're so in the so with the understanding that as business owners, we have to go out there and please everybody. And you need to understand, again, back to the trust issue, that it isn't the it isn't you that people are turning to for information about your business. They're turning to their friends, they're turning to their family, they're turning to Google reviews. So you have to fundamentally understand who your customer is and then work to make them so amazingly happy, make their experience so fantastic that they turn around and tell everybody else. Because they're going to grow your business, your customer, not you.
Exactly. You're essentially starting with a small group of very happy customers, consumers, clients, and then it just grows from there. And I've always understood that. I mean, my business, as you know, is referral-based.
Right.
I've never advertised, ever. I've never spent a penny in advertising. I've never had to.
Right.
But I guess they knew that instinctively.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, when you have overhead with a business, as so many businesses do, you maybe have a retail space or an office building. Maybe you have five, six employees. Maybe you have 300 employees or whatever. The moment that economy started to shift, or the moment it even does it now, your panic button goes on. And when your panic button goes on, you just start trying to take any business you can take. But what I want people to understand is that in this economy, a bad experience is on steroids. It's so different than it used to be. I mean, watch your own buying behavior. Again, go back and you'll see that you watch Google reviews. You basically take advice from people you've never met more so than you would listen to a business owner talk about their organization.
And before that, Meredith, what was that big book that everybody would buy in Consumer Reports? Came out annually?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, that was like the Bible. You had to go to Consumer Reports to find out if that nifty-difty Toyota you wanted was any good.
Right, right.
And now they're gone, aren't they, Consumer Reports? Haven't they just kind
I'm
of...
I'm not sure if they're gone.
I'm not either.
Do you think, I think you're right. But either way, I would bet... We read something, we go, I'm not sure that's true. We don't believe in the press. We don't believe in politics. We don't believe in anything anymore except our friend Betty and that guy John that wrote something on Google reviews. You know, it's just the way that we make decisions now. And so that's all well and good, but as a business owner, we have to understand that.
And that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, truly, I would rather read a review on Yelp or, you know, if I'm going to a restaurant or a hotel, I want to see what others' true experiences were, not, you know, the beautiful website. Certainly, I'm going to take information from there. I'm absolutely going to. But it's going to filter through, okay, but what are people really saying about it? And that makes perfect sense to me. I find that very logical.
Well, and you're making such a good point now, too, because there's, you know, not only, so when you go to find out what people are saying about it, as business owners, as salespeople, as professionals, we've got to make sure that there is information out there about us. So we've got to work hard to get above the white noise and really build a reputation. I mean, you've got to create the buzz. You've got to get people talking about you. Because you may be amazing, but if I go to do research, it's one thing if there's bad things about you, but it's almost worse if there's nothing written about you. If people aren't talking about you, nobody's buying.
Exactly. So, Meredith, some of the biggest challenges that you're seeing with business owners right now is basically in sales and understanding their market. Is that what I think you're saying?
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, actually, I would say the hottest issue right now, the thing that I hear off everybody's tongue is finding and engaging employees. It's absolutely number one. And secondary behind that goes sales. It's funny, I was just talking to a group in October. I'm doing a keynote in Nashville, and I got their survey results back from, they'd surveyed everybody, said, you know, what do you want the topic to be about? And by far, they said sales. But then when I got on the phone, I started talking to people. They're like, yeah, sales is an issue. But we, you know, figuring out how to attract great employees, keep great employees, and then coming behind that is succession planning. You know, who's going to basically take over as next level leaders? And those are really, when you really talk to business owners, when you really talk to, you know, whether they be large or small businesses, that really is, you know, the war on talent is probably the biggest issue out there.
I have to ask you, because millennials come up a lot lately on this show, and I've talked with a lot of millennial experts, and I'm wondering if that's kind of a hot button issue right now too.
Yeah, and I think the whole millennial thing's kind of a mess. I mean, not to say that the generation isn't different. I mean, you know, I was different than my parents' generation and everything. But here's the thing, is that when the economy shifted, way more than the economy changed, employees changed. I mean, when I was younger, and I got my first job, I really fundamentally believed that if I went to work there and I worked hard, that my job would be there, that if I worked a little harder, I would get promoted, and that if I wanted to stay a lifetime, I would have retirement and a pension. Well, I don't care what age your employee is right now, everybody who comes to work in the back of their mind is thinking downsizing, outsourcing, merger, acquisition, whatever. And so as employers, we've taken away security and a guarantee, or the marketplace has done that. So we have to put something else back in its place. I believe as many problems as people are having with millennials, if they really looked inside their organizations, if they haven't built a culture that can attract millennials, then they may be holding on to Gen Xers and boomers, but they've got a bunch that have quit and stayed. Because retaining an employee is not the same thing as engaging one.
And I do know that, but explain that for our audience, because I think that's a huge topic all by itself.
Just because somebody gets up and comes to work every day, even if they get to work on time and they stay, and even if they, you know, never even use all their vacation, a retained employee is not the same as an engaged one. If you want to succeed in this economy, and I know you do, then you're working, you need employees to be as passionate and as excited and as motivated about creating an amazing customer experience and the growth of your organization as you are. And when you really talk to employees, I mean, I think the numbers now are like 70% climbing up to 84% of people who are just showing there to get a paycheck. So what you really need to look on is just how engaged they are. That's what you're trying to do. And so everybody talks about, you know, millennials flip over every couple of years or whatever. Well, I'd rather have an engaged employee for 2 years than one who wasn't engaged that hung out for 12 to 15.
By the water cooler. Yeah, I totally understand that. We've all seen it. So do you have... I'm like you. I mean, when I was young growing up, you know, I was told, you know, go to work, show up every day on time, you know, do the work, do the best you can do. I mean, I was always advanced very, very quickly. If this just, my work ethic was such that it happened. And, you know, I was always the one that left, but I always left for greener pastures or something that now, because you do grow and you do mature, was, you know, of interest to me. Where my current or old job was like, you know, I've done everything I can do here. I've got to go now. And I think that's what people don't understand about millennials. You know, they're intensely curious. You know, they're going to do things their own way, as you did and I did. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I'm like you. I'd rather have them there, engaged, brand ambassadors, if you will, and then wish them well when they go somewhere else. Find somebody just like them.
Well, you know, the thing is that they, I mean, I'm no millennial expert, but they say that the research shows that it's a generation split in half, that half millennials are amazing with an incredible work ethic and half are, not. And I think, well, you know, look at my, I feel like my generation was, you know, was kind of the same way, but here's the thing is that I think of myself as really engaged, passionate, and with a strong work ethic. But my very first job out of college, and I could have stayed there for forever. You know, the organization is still flourishing and growing as we speak. But my my first boss was very much a micromanager. So my ideas, they weren't interested in doing things differently. They weren't interested in, you know, new ideas. They weren't interested in kind of letting me spread my wings and do things that that I felt would add value to the organization. I didn't feel like I had a voice anywhere. And so, you know, it sort of sucked the life right out of me. And within, you know, 2.5 years, I left. So you're very much in control of the culture that you create, which can attract amazing employees, engage them no matter their age.
No question about it. Okay, now let's move on. I'm wanting to ask you about your new book, which I have not read yet, and I'm looking forward to reading it. So tell me about this one, because the title is fantastic.
Defy Marketplace Gravity. Actually, a friend of mine, Donna St. Louis, gave me that title, and I titled it for a keynote, and I was so passionate about it that I wrote the book on it. But it basically is, it's sort of an outgrowth of winning in the trust and value economy. And winning in the trust and value economy was very dated to about 2010. This was, we're in crisis. This is exactly what you need to do. Well, here we are at, you know, 2017, and we are just living in constantly shifting times. And so this is the guidebook, this is the Bible, so to speak, of, you know, of understanding that concept? And then how do you lead an organization in a global, constantly shifting, somewhat volatile atmosphere? When you think about the fact that we've talked about, it's very difficult to find really great employees. We have no idea what the marketplace is going to do as far as, you know, the economy. And then add to it, competition isn't like it used to be. Honestly, we're all sitting here waiting for, you know, we used to think competition was the guy next door. Now competition is something that we haven't even, that hasn't even been invented yet. So how do you lead and lead effectively and grow an organization in an environment like this?
How do you? You just scared the heck out of me.
No,
I'm sitting here going, what crud?
You got to read the book, because that's the those are the step-by-step strategies of exactly how to do it. It's where leaders need what they need to focus on, and the strategies that they need to implement.
Now, I'm assuming that when you say leaders, you're not just saying that this is for, you know, big companies, big corporations. It can be anybody who has, like me, a small team or, you know, a small business. It could be a dry cleaner down the corner.
Absolutely. In fact,
okay.
Thank you. I'm using the term very, very generically. Leader means anybody who you're sitting at home owning a business on your, you know, computer, and you never leave the house and talk to anybody. Maybe you run a Fortune 100 company. It's for anybody in there. But you said something very important, and that is a small business, is that I really think this is the time of smaller businesses. And those are the ones that, I mean, you really, when you adopt these strategies, you really get a competitive edge. You really get a competitive advantage.
Okay. Can you give me a hint as to what the strategies are?
Yeah, absolutely. Without going into too much detail, but yeah, we'll definitely talk at a high level about that. The first is, you know, one of the things that leaders really need to understand and they really need to do is that you really clearly got to have focus and flexibility. Now, how's that for a strategy? You have to be razor-like focused and still have the ability to flex and turn on a dime. So in the book, we talk about how to build a strategy like that. How do you, as a leader, as a business owner, stay razor-like focused, clear on what you're trying to accomplish, yet operate in an environment where you remain incredibly flexible so that if anything shifts in the economy, anything shifts with competition, anything shifts with your customers, you can turn on a dime to either lessen a threat or take advantage of an opportunity.
So basically, you know, leaders, business owners, small business owners, whoever we are, we have to really keep an open mind and not get kind of stuck into the way we used to do it, right?
Just need to quote that and put that on a bumper sticker. Because it's so true, is that probably one of the biggest obstacles to success today is ego. And ego in the sense that I don't mean like you have a big ego and you're vain. What I mean is you're married to your ideas. You're married to
your
strategy, and you're married.
Yep.
Yeah. And again, the majority of things, and we go into this in the book, the majority of things that can impact your business positively or negatively are outside of your control. You really control very little. You control the products and services that you sell. You to some degree control the people that you employ. You to some degree control the customers that you choose. But that's kind of it. You know, so much that can impact your success is outside of your control. So, again, you know, when we start with this focus and flexibility, which I just love that whole, it's a couple of chapters, and I love that whole piece, because it sounds almost schizophrenic. How can you possibly do that as a leader? But you have to. If you don't keep your head down and stay focused, you're going to get so caught up in the, bright lights. There's an idea. But at the same time, so much is shifting and changing that if you stay razor-like focused on an idea, and something shifts and it goes out of date, then or you're going to miss an opportunity or really be flattened by a threat.
I love that. I mean, it sounds horrible. It really does.
Yeah.
But it's so, it makes so much sense.
When you understand it and you fundamentally can easily and effectively do it, what an unbelievable competitive advantage.
Well, and so much of it depends on you really paying attention, I would think, to what's going on around you, not what's going on in your own mind. I mean, look, we all get tricked by our own brains. You know, we fall in love with an idea, we marry it, we just know it's going to work. You know, we're not going to deviate from it. And then all of a sudden we're like, what the heck just hit me in the rear end?
Right.
So, I love that you have to stay focused, but you have to have your head on a swivel too.
Which is a different perspective for leaders. And again, this is another whole piece that we talk about, is we're as entrepreneurs, as business owners, as leaders, we believe that our jobs are to focus on our business. And probably, one of the bigger shifts that has happened to this economy is you have to be focused outside, because that's where the majority of opportunity and threat is happening. And so, again, in the book, we go through and we teach you how to do that and actually do it in a way. You know, one of the focuses of the book is to streamline running, owning a business, or being a leader in a company. I mean, there's so many things you can focus on. Nobody has enough time to do it all. So how do you understand what those things are that you need to put your energy into that really become the domino effect for everything else? That if you do these things right, everything else is going to take care of it. And one we've talked about a lot, and that really is employee engagement. How do you hire right? How do you retain? How do you be okay with the fact that this is, how do you run a business when there's a good chance, a good portion of your workforce is gonna roll over every 2 to 3 years? As we move more towards millennials, those things will happen. So how do you do that, and how do you do it, while trying to run a business?
Well, I'm guessing, and like I said, I'm looking forward to having the book, but I'm guessing that you have to really tighten up your training process and understand, and this is just me because I go through the hiring process all the time too, but really understand the strengths and the weaknesses of the person that's going to be on your team or working for you. Where can you place them that they're going to be of the best benefit to you, your clients, your customers, to them? I mean, don't you almost have to kind of go deep with these people and not just hire them and say, hey, by the way, go down to HR, you get your hiring package, good luck to you. I mean, you can't do that anymore, can you?
No, and in fact, you don't want to do that anymore because this isn't an economy where you can run your business by yourself anymore. Again, I sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but the majority of things that can impact you, they're coming from so many different directions. You need everybody on your team to be keenly aware and as passionate about coming up with new ways to do things as you are. So it's more in this economy about building in a culture that ensures you're getting feedback and you're creating some level of ownership, skin in the game, from every level of your organization, that people understand that and feel that they have a piece of your company.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's how I operate with my team. It would be very easy for me to say, okay, you work on Infusionsoft, Billy Bob, you work on, this piece of this website. I found very early on that if I gave them a big picture and told them what my goals were, that they would pop in and go, well, Denise, I know you're doing it this way, but how about this? Well, yeah. And it just works so much better when everybody is, aware of what's going on and they're engaged. If they're not engaged, they don't work for me any longer. It's really that easy.
Right.
Interesting. Okay, so when you're talking about the book and you're talking about the different sections of it, what is the thing that you pick a spot that you love the most that you think is going to be of the most benefit to people who read this book and implement the strategies?
Wow.
No pressure. Just pick a spot.
Yeah,
if you need a moment, take it.
Well, and you know, I'm just kind of passionate about every section. But if I was going to be forced to razor like focus, it's the very first section where I explain the why. Because what I am asking you to do with the book, if you want to defy marketplace gravity and succeed no matter what this economy does, what I'm asking you to do is to be willing to let go of the way that you've always done things. You know, the similarity that I, the example that I draw is, you know, at our ancestors went from the agriculture age into the industrial age. They literally went through a shift. And we would all laugh now at somebody who was still out there, you know, using a horse, you know, to plow the fields versus using, you know, a tractor. Well, basically, as a business owner, as a leader, you need to understand you're living literally in that world. If you're not adopting the new strategies, if you're not embracing the new techniques, then you are the person pushing a horse with a plow.
Oh. That does make sense.
Mm-hmm. And so
you can't just kind of hang on to those same old things because they worked in the past. What was working, honestly, Meredith, even last week, maybe out of date.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. Okay, so do you have a few tips or ideas that our listeners can put into place before they get the book? And by the way, I will put this in the chat box. I've already put it in the chat box. And I will put it out on social media, but you're also offering a free gift to our listeners, which I already downloaded. It's pretty amazing.
Oh,
so I'll make sure that that gets out there into the cyberspace. But in the meantime, before I get a hold of my book, what are a few tips or ideas that people can just go, oh, okay, I'm doing that right now?
Well, I think the first thing is to download that free gift, because in that free gift, I've given you four books, and they are that's the very first thing that people ought to do, because there's fantastic information for you as well as for your team. The second thing is that if I were going to share with anybody. The one thing that they need to do right now is really question what is working in your business and what isn't. Be honest. Be honest with yourself. Is really look at are your employees engaged? Are your sales strategies, are the things that you're doing really getting you to the sales, you know, level that you really want to be in? What's working and what isn't? Because before you can make change, you've got to be willing to be honest with yourself about your business and really figure out what is working and what isn't. Then the other thing is that if I were going to go home with you right now, I would have you look at what are three goals you want to accomplish next year. Just three, no more than that, just three. And focus as solidly as you can on those goals and how you're going to accomplish them.
Yeah, I do the same thing. When I wake up every day and I think, okay, what am I going to really focus on? Of course, there's always small things that you have to do, little housekeeping things, but I give myself no more than three. I know better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that my little monkey brain will take off and just go, I don't know where. And at the end of the day, I'm exhausted and I'm mad. So if I focus on two, three is a bit rough for me, but no more than two solid things, money-making things that I have to do that day, I just find I'm a lot more focused and a lot more proactive and a lot more excited. It's like, okay, I've mm-hmm. got this. I can do this. I don't have to, you know, do the laundry and, you know, talk to this person. I mean, I do have to do those things, but I don't add them to my list. I find that just putting the important things on my list and then just taking care of all the smaller things as they pop up works for me. Otherwise, I've got a list that, honest to God, looks like I rolled it from the toilet paper roll. It just keeps on going.
Well, the other thing that's so important is, you know, a lot of times as business owners, we can handle a lot. I mean, there's a personality that takes on a business. But a strategic plan, having goals, part of it is keeping your team motivated. And maybe there's 10 things you want to accomplish next year, but if you just throw out the first three and they can focus their time and energy there, then they feel good seeing it get crossed off.
Exactly. Listen, I just got my free gift, and I want everybody to know, go grab this, the book that we've been talking about from the very beginning, Winning in a Trust and Value Economy, A Guide to Business and Sales Success. It's in there. Go grab this thing. This is really cool. I'm looking at this and going, woohoo, I've got the book. But now I can read it on my computer.
You can read it on your computer. The things that I put in there are not in print anymore. So these are the only way that you can get them. And the reason I took Winning in the Trust and Value Economy is out there a little bit, but Defy Marketplace Gravity is really going to be the update of that. So that one's going out. But
I understand.
That's a great one to read first, because everything in there is really the foundation of Defy Marketplace Gravity. And then another book in there, The Confidence Plan. You know, I thought it was a silly book when I wrote it, but I was asked at a couple events, can confidence be taught? Can it be learned? And sure enough, it can. And I basically wrote the strategy of how to do it. And it's key to anything you want to accomplish. So this is a step-by-step guide of how to do it. So, yeah, I love that free gift. Opt into it. Take it. You'll really, there's good information in there, not only for you, but also to share.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's go back to the book that we're talking about now. I have to ask you, I mean, I understand that you wrote it because it's kind of an update to Winning in the Trust and Value Economy. Was it something that you just felt like you had to do, or did you, with your head on a swivel, figure out that this really needed to be done and quickly because things are moving so quickly? I'd love to know the process.
You know, the process was, I would say it's a combination of both of those. You know, it is, the way I tend to write books is people ask me questions and I listen. And I was starting to feel that Winning in the Trust and Value Economy, because I talk so much about the shift of 2008, I was starting to feel that it got a bit dated. And then I thought, you know, people kept approaching me every time I did a speaking engagement, every time I did a consulting job, you know, really helped me understand, you know, we're doing this, it isn't working. How do I keep my team motivated? I feel like we're working ourselves to death. We're getting burned out. And I just thought, there has got to be a better way. And I just started to really look at it and study it. And some of it I took from other companies doing it, but quite frankly, it is, to me, it's the only place you can find all of this information, because I really piecemealed it together. And because what I find is very few, if any, organizations are really doing it right on any level. And I'll even give you an example. It's, you know, it seems like sacrilegious, but let me even throw Amazon out there. You know, Amazon is fabulous, but if you have a problem, if you have any kind of issue, you can't talk to a person. You can't get to them. And as our world and our economy becomes more global and more competitive, you're going to find the steps and strategies of what excellence is, to really defy marketplace gravity, to really shield yourself from competitors, really get above that white noise, give yourself competitive advantage, make your customers incredibly happy, and have the best team. There's a set of steps and a series of things that you've got to be hitting on all levels, and I put that all together in that book.
What are some of the questions, Meredith, that you were seeing pop up the most? And quickly, to go back to Amazon, you're right, you cannot reach a live person. PayPal, same way. You know, my cat food is delivered to my door. My litter is, I don't go buy these heavy things at the store. They're delivered to my house. And, you know, I unstacked the boxes and I put them in the garage, and all of a sudden I realized there was a stench in my garage. Turns out one of the cartons of cat food had just been beat to death and exploded most of the cans. It stunk. I took some pictures. I sent them off to Amazon. I mean, 5 minutes later, I had a full refund. I was like, I'll be darned. I was, you know, digging in for a big old fight. Didn't happen.
Yep.
But I have to say Amazon is beginning to scare the bejeebers out of me. They're getting too big, I think.
Yeah.
So exactly. Much as I love them, I'm thinking, I don't want to buy everything from you. You know, I want to support my local people. So there is that. Yeah. Okay.
So what are some of the questions and things that people are asking?
Yeah, what are some of the most common things that you're seeing? I'm really fascinated by what you're saying about leaders, owners, HR people going, we're working ourselves to death. Nothing is really shaking loose. We're losing people, and we're running in place. So what are some of the most common issues that you're seeing?
Well, again, one that we discussed was really hiring, attracting, and fully engaging employees, keeping people motivated, keeping them engaged, how to get the heck out of the price war. People feel like, they just can't really get a leg up in that area. How to make things sustainable. People feel like they can have a growth spurt for a year, maybe two, but then, then that flattens out. And then, again, back to that one that I wrote about, early on in the book was, how am I supposed to stay focused and how am I supposed to lead in a way when the majority of things that are hitting me, I don't have any control over? I mean, people are looking for certainty and there is no certainty. So how do you leave it? How do you lead in uncertain times?
That's a good question. How do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that is, leading in uncertain times is very much about being focused and being flexible, really having your eye on understanding how your organization makes money and putting everybody into the positions. You've got to run on such a thin, you've got to be so efficient and so effective. And again, we go into all of that in the book. And then you've got to have the best and the brightest on your team. And I believe that some of the things that have changed that leaders need to have their fingertips on, they're different than what they were before.
Interesting. Okay, so listen, where can people find you?
They can find me at valuespeaker.com. Again, valuespeaker.com. They can find me on your podcast because I've got not only this one, but others. And, of course, please connect with me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. I would love that.
Definitely. Okay, I have to ask this. What are your success rituals? I know you're huge into bike riding, and I always see you and your husband on your bike all over the place. And I know that you're heavily into taking very good care of yourself. But what are some of your success rituals, the things that you do without fail that just keep you going and motivated every day?
I love that. What a great question. First of all, I get up first thing every morning and I meditate and I read my goal cards. That's the way I start every single morning. The other is that, I am definitely a workaholic. I mean, I work a lot, but I'm very balanced. You will find me every day doing some form of physical activity without fail, no matter what's on my schedule. I make time to ride my bike, go for a hike, go for a walk, go to the gym and take a class, do a yoga class, do something like that. The other thing is that I really make time for family and friends. I'm very balanced in that arena. If you came home and lived with me, you'd see I'm a big dinner party thrower. I plan girls' night out every 6 weeks where my girlfriends and I, without fail, go and get a massage and go to dinner. No matter what's on the schedule that day, we're out of there by 4. So so I believe I'm all about spoiling myself because I really believe it gives me the energy and capacity to be there for my clients and things like I need to be.
Very definitely. We've got people in the chat room. I just asked if they had any questions for you before we end this. And nobody's responding yet. But anyway, well, listen, I will go ahead and put this. I'll spell it out. I don't know if people will be able to find it. But basically, it's https://meredithelliottpowell.lpages.co/ebook-launch. And, of course, I'll put it out all over social media. Meredith, thank you so much for being here with me. I love chatting with you, and I love your book. So, anytime you want to come back, you just let me know.
I will do it, Denise. I love talking with you as well. Thank you so much.
Oh, anytime. Listen, as is always the case, this podcast hour went way too quickly, and I thank you for all the wonderful tips and advice that you shared with our audience. And today's episode was sponsored by my company, Your Office on the Web. If you're looking for full-on business creation services such as web development, virtual assistants, online business management, social media marketing, so much more, please visit yourofficeontheweb.com. And be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Meredith, have a wonderful weekend, and thanks again.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.